following program is intended for mature audiences.
They used to bounce messages across the earth.
Shows. Everyone in the old world had a show.
Do you think there's still somebody out there? Sending shows?
Who knows? Those are the planes of silence.
Please raise your right hand and repeat after me.
No! God!
No! No!
No. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. No. 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 Hell no. 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 I refuse. No.
The Eastern world, it is exploding. Violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war. But what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
The evidence is mounting. As I lie here face down crying, the evidence mounts. I feel the evidence mounts. It's mounting. I feel something back there. I feel so the evidence is not only mounting, it's fucking.
Do you take it in the ass?
This is in no way to disparage the joys of sex, of any kind of sex, anal sex even. But this is what bottom feels like. We are doomed in hours. This is Tom Savino, live from Burbank, California. Savino Veritas. I may be joking, but I'm never kidding.
Savino Veritas.
Total fabrication.
The gripes of rat.
In keeping with the anal sex analogy, the country as a whole is really being swindled. We are being swindled. Maybe because we're not that bright.
We went on the street and we asked people which was better, Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, which is anyone who knows anything about this subject at all knows. Obamacare is just a nickname for the Affordable Care Act. They're the same thing. So with all the attention being paid to the subject, lately, we decided to ask this question again to see if Americans have learned anything over the last 3 years. And, well, let's see if we have.
We're talking to people about health care today.
Okay.
Do you support Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act?
Affordable Care Act.
And why is that?
Well, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Obama, so I don't support him in the Obama things that he's got going on. I'm actually really excited for President-elect Donald Trump, so.
Right. So you don't like anything Obama does, and you prefer the Affordable Care Act?
Absolutely.
Do you support Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act?
I support Obamacare.
So if you were a senator and you could vote today, you would vote to keep Obamacare instead of the Affordable Care Act?
Yes.
Do you support Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act?
I guess the Affordable Care Act.
And why do you prefer the Affordable Care Act over Obamacare?
I'm not really sure. My girlfriend supports Trump, so I go with whatever she says.
What is the main difference between Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act?
One is you pay, and then the other one is Obama pays for you.
Right, Obama pays, pretty big difference.
Pretty big difference.
What makes Obamacare better than the Affordable Care Act?
It's more affordable for the less fortunate, I'd say.
So Obamacare is more affordable than the Affordable Care Act?
I'd say it is.
I believe that Obamacare, the premiums are too much, too high, so people are end up paying more.
Right.
So I believe in the Affordable Care Act.
And so the Affordable Care Act is more affordable than Obamacare?
Right, correct.
Right, right.
Which is obvious based on the name.
It's in the name, right.
Right.
Why do you like the Affordable Care Act more than Obamacare?
Because I don't like Obama.
But you like the Affordable Care Act?
Yeah.
What if I told you Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act are the same thing? We're talking about health care with people out here today.
Tight.
Do you support Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act?
You know, I'm kind of like... Can you repeat the question?
Sure, yeah. With health care, do you support Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act when it comes to health care?
I guess... I mean, Obama's pretty tight, so I guess I'd probably go with
Obama. Sure, sure.
Yeah.
How stoned are you right now?
Pretty stoned.
Right. Do you know what your current health care insurance plan is?
I don't know, man. I don't even think I have health insurance.
Not at all?
No, I think my mom took me off for health insurance. Shout out to my moms.
Thank you, Jimmy Kimmel and the Jimmy Kimmel Live Show in Hollywood. I was in Hollywood last weekend for a huge demonstration sponsored by Bernie Sanders and the Nurses Association in efforts to keep our health care. But we have things are going south real fast. And you could think of that phrase in many ways, going south, because the country Trumpkins are responsible for this downfall in many ways. But we all are. We have to do something. We must do something now. Fortunately, America does have elected officials who are standing up and fighting for democracy. Here's Elizabeth Warren grilling the stupid Betsy DeVos for Secretary of Education.
Ms. DeVos, many of my Democratic colleagues have pointed out your lack of experience in K-12 public schools, but I'd like to ask you about your qualifications for leading the nation on higher education. The Department of Education is in charge of making sure that the $150 billion that we invest in students each year gets into the right hands and that students have the support they need to be able to pay back their student loans. The Secretary of Education is essentially responsible for managing a $1 trillion student loan bank and distributing $30 billion in Pell Grants to students each year. The financial futures of an entire generation of young people depend on your department getting that right. Now, Mrs. DeVos, do you have any direct experience in running a bank?
Senator, I do not.
Uh-huh. Have you ever managed or overseen a $1 trillion loan program?
I have not.
How about a $1 billion loan program?
I have not.
Okay, so no experience in managing a program like this. How about participating in one? I think it's important for the person who is in charge of our financial aid programs to understand what it's like for students and their families who are struggling to pay for college. Mrs. DeVos, have you ever taken out a student loan from the federal government to help pay for college?
I have not.
Have any of your children had to borrow money in order to go to college?
They have been fortunate not to.
Uh-huh. Have you had any personal experience with a Pell Grant?
Not personal experience, but certainly friends and students with whom I've worked.
So you have no personal experience with college financial aid or management of higher education. Mrs. DeVos, then let's start with the basics. Do you support protecting federal taxpayer dollars from waste, fraud, and abuse?
Absolutely.
Oh, good. So do I. Because now we all know that President-elect Trump's experience with higher education was to create a fake university, which resulted in his paying a $25 million to students that he cheated. So I'm curious about how the Trump administration would protect against waste, fraud, and abuse at similar for-profit colleges. So here's my question. How do you plan to protect taxpayer dollars from waste, fraud, and abuse by colleges that take in millions of dollars in federal student aid?
Senator, if confirmed, I will certainly be very vigilant.
Yeah, and I'm asking
people,
how. How are you going to do that? You said you're committed.
The individuals with whom I work in the department will ensure that federal monies are used properly and appropriately, and I will look forward to working with you.
So you're going to subcontract making sure that what happened with universities that cheat students doesn't happen anymore.
Shut up. I'm rich. I'm richer than all this, you Hollywood trash.
No, I didn't say
You're going to give that to someone else to do? I just want to know what your ideas are for making sure we don't have problems with waste, fraud, and abuse.
I want to make sure we don't have problems with as well. And well, if confirmed, I will work diligently to ensure that we are addressing any of those issues.
Well, let me make a suggestion on this. It actually turns out that there are a whole group of rules that are already written and are there, and all you have to do is enforce them. So what I want to know is, will you commit to enforcing these rules to ensure that no career college receives federal funds unless they can prove that they are actually preparing their students for gainful employment and not cheating them?
No!
Senator, I will commit to ensuring that institutions which receive federal funds are actually serving their students well.
And so you will enforce the gainful employment rule to make sure that these career colleges are not cheating students?
We will certainly review that rule.
You'll
and
review
see that
it? You
and,
will not commit to enforce it?
And see that it is actually achieving what the intentions are.
I don't understand about reviewing it. We talked in my office. There are already rules in place to stop waste, fraud, and abuse. And I don't understand how you cannot be sure about enforcing them. You know, swindlers and crooks are out there doing backflips when they hear an answer like this. If confirmed, you will be the cop on the beat. And if you can't commit to use the tools that are already available to you in the Department of Education, then I don't see how you can be the Secretary of Education. And I look forward to having a second round of questions.
Don't you understand what I'm trying to say?
The following perspective is from the BBC.
As Donald Trump began his march through American democracy toward the White House earlier this year, my mind kept drifting to a passage I'd read years before as a graduate student from the first book on politics ever written, Plato's Republic. The passage is from the dialogue where Socrates and his friends are talking about the nature of different political systems, how they change over time, and how one can slowly evolve into another. Socrates says something pretty shocking. Tyranny is probably established out of no other regime than democracy. Democracy was defined as a political system which maximizes two things, equality and freedom. Everyone is equal, and everyone can do whatever he or she likes. And the longer a democracy lasts, Socrates says, the more democratic it becomes. Its freedoms multiply until it becomes a many-colored cloak decorated in all hues. Men are interchangeable with women, and all their natural differences forgotten. Animals have rights. Foreigners can come and work just like citizens. Children boss their parents around. Teachers are afraid of their students. The rich try to look just like the poor. Soon, every kind of inequality is despised. The wealthy are particularly loathed, and elites in general are treated as suspect, perpetuating inequality and representing injustice. It's when a democracy has evolved into this, Plato argues, that a would-be tyrant will often seize his moment. He is usually of the elite, but is in tune with the time, given over to random pleasures and whims, feasting on food, and especially sex. He makes his move by taking over a particularly obedient mob and attacking his wealthy peers as corrupt. He's a traitor to his class, and soon his elite enemies find a way to appease him or are forced to flee. Eventually, he stands alone, offering the addled, distracted, and self-indulgent citizens a kind of relief from democracy's endless choices and insecurities. He rides a backlash to excess. Too much freedom seems to change into nothing but too much slavery, and offers himself as the personified answer to all problems, to replace the elites and rule alone on behalf of the masses. And as the people thrill to him as a kind of solution, a democracy willingly, impetuously, repeals itself.
Tell me over and over and over again, my friend, I you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
This has been plaguing me for a day or two. The news cycle in America moves so fast, right, that oftentimes you don't get enough time to process everything that's happened. You know, it's like an orgy. But I think
Trevor Noah from The Daily Show.
Coming years, we're going to have to get better at taking a step back to fully understand what it all means. Take yesterday, for example. There was so much news. Trump was holding a press conference while his nominee for Secretary of State was being questioned by Congress, while the intelligence community was trying to decide if a report on golden showers was confirmed or not, and the brand new Game of Thrones book came out. Yeah. And let's just say he took some inspiration from the golden shower incident. Hashtag gold wedding. It's really weird. Really, really weird book. By the way, that's how we count where I'm from. I don't know if that's like a... You guys were weirded out. It's an accent thing. Calm down. So tonight, let's do this. Let's take a step back and try and process one of the crazy things that happened yesterday, which was Donald Trump's press conference. Hashtag gold yelling.
Mr. President-elect,
go ahead.
Can you say categorically?
She's asking a question.
Mr. President-elect, can you give us a question?
Don't be
You're
rude.
Attacking us. Can you give us a question?
Don't be rude.
Can you give us a question?
I'm not going to give you a question.
Can you stay?
You are fake news.
I love that Mr. Real Tan over here is telling people they're fake. CNN, you're fake. You're fake. Next question goes to Batboy from the National Enquirer. Yeah, you're real. Yes, I do think Hillary adopted an alien baby. Yeah, yeah. Now, we already talked about Trump's anti-media crusade yesterday. But yesterday's press conference was also a scary glimpse into the future of what we might be able to expect from a Donald Trump presidency. And let's start by looking at the spectacle. Right, which is all Trump wanted us to be looking at yesterday. Right? Trump shared the stage with what can only be described as Manila Mountain.
These papers are just some of the many documents that I've signed, turning over complete and total control to my sons.
Good Lord. That's a lot of paper. So much paper. What is he doing there? It looks like a police chief showing off a homework drug bust. It was like, as you can see, we found a lot of math, we found a lot of accounting. But jokes aside, you have to be impressed. Look how much work he's been doing for America. But don't look too close, because if you do, you might start to notice things. For instance, the paper inside the folders doesn't look like weeks of contracts. It looks brand new. Yeah, and I know some of you might be hating. You might be like, oh, Trevor, no, you're just hating, you know? But you tell me. If you had real folders of real business you were really doing, wouldn't you at least have labels on them? Come on, Donald. Like, you know what? At this point, it's not even about the lie, man. It's about the lack of respect. Just take like 2 seconds to write down a fake label. Just write, you could even be like, just be like conflict stuff. We don't care. And the reason this matters is that spectacle is what Donald Trump uses in place of actually doing something, which is surprisingly effective. Because now there are people all over America going, I know he left his business because I saw the papers. I mean, what kind of sick person would bring empty folders to a press conference? Am I right? Am I right? Here's another thing we learned from the press conference. And it's not something new, by the way, but it's a reminder. President Trump, he's going to lie a lot.
What I'm going to be doing is my two sons, who are right here, Don and Eric, are going to be running the company. They are going to be running it in a very professional manner. They're not going to discuss it with me.
They're not going to discuss it with you at all for 8 years? Either that's a lie or Donald Trump. Actually, what if the only reason Trump ran for president was so that he wouldn't have to talk to his sons for 4 years? Maybe that's what he did. That was the entire reason. So
Sorry, Eric, can't talk. Conflict of interest.
But, Dad, I just wanted to tell you I love you.
Bye now. Bye. Bye. Get him out of here. Bye.
And by the way, the Office of Government Ethics has looked through Donald Trump's divestment plans. And like a python at a penis party, they were not impressed.
The head of the Government Ethics Office called the plan wholly inadequate.
Stepping back from running his positions is meaningless from a conflicts of interest perspective. The idea of limiting direct communication about the business is wholly inadequate. This is not a blind trust. It's not even close.
Yes! Thank you! Thank you! Thank you, soon-to-be unemployed ethics man. Thank you! Thank you! By the way, I hope he ended his speech with his LinkedIn profile. Just be like, and you can hire me very soon. Very soon. But he's right. Trump saying his children running his company is a blind trust. That's like a veggie burger saying, I'm a hamburger. Get the f*** out of here, you falafel-ass piece of You're not a burger. One thing that was particularly illuminating yesterday was how little regard Donald J. Trump seems to have for the presidency itself. In the past, U.S. presidents have always acknowledged themselves as being accountable to the American people. It's a crucial piece of what a president should be. And accountable to all people, including the ones who didn't vote for them. But as Donnie always warned us, he's an outsider.
Will you release your tax returns to prove what you're saying about no deals in Russia?
Well, I'm not releasing the tax returns because, as you know, they're under audit.
But every president since the 70s has had a required audit from the IRS.
I've never heard that. You know, the only one that cares about my tax returns are the reporters, okay?
You don't think the American public is concerned about that?
No, I don't think so. I won.
Do you believe that
happy ending? President. No, I don't think they care at all.
How great would it be if we could all use Donald Trump's logic in our daily lives? Yeah. Get busted for free on the freeway for speeding, you know, and the cop would be there like, do you know how fast you were going? You'd be, look at all these other people. They don't care. They don't care. They don't care. If they cared, they wouldn't have gotten out of the way. They don't care. But you know what? The sad truth is, in a way, Trump's right. Because the people who voted for him, they don't care. And the people who chose not to vote, they don't care. The only thing we do know right now is Obamacare. Obamacare very much. Obamacare, man. And the 65 million people who are actually the majority, they care. But anyway, I just hope that the press keeps caring. I'm glad they asked that question, and I hope they keep asking it. Because without a fully functional press, the only one who's going to be blind in this whole situation is us.
But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
People of like minds need to support each other, unite. I'll be at another march the day after the coronation. Tomorrow's the coronation of Trump. And this is Tom Savino from Burbank, California, with Savino Veritas. And again, friends, I may be joking, but I'm never kidding. And the evidence is mounting. It really is mounting. And Trump is following very closely the design of Putin and Hitler. He plans on having military marches routinely to honor the military and show how strong we are. And in terms of the press, he is evicting the press from the White House, ostensibly for a larger, more comfortable area for the press. However, most of us don't know that he is designing this in direct relation to or direct modeling after Putin and Russia's huge press rooms where supporters of Trump can outnumber the news people and applaud when necessary. Let's listen to this.
I'm Keith Olbermann, and this is The Resistance. Trump's banana Republicans have proposed that White House press briefings be moved out of the presidential mansion and held next door at the executive office building, and why should you care for one damned minute? Rance Priebus says it's a great thing because the result would be, quote, about quadrupling the amount of reporters that can cover the White House. And certainly that sounds like a wonderful intensification of the bright, shining light of a democratic free press on the operation of the commander-in-chief and his noble staff. The more, the better, right? Just the way it works in Russia. A giant crowd of reporters screaming for the leader's attention, making signs indicating what organization they belong to, and even signs and props indicating what questions they intend to ask. Some of them showing exactly the kind of objectivity and respectful skepticism a free press is supposed to bring to the coverage of government at its highest levels. And yes, she's a self-described journalist at a Putin news conference, holding a picture of Putin ripping off his shirt to indicate he's actually Superman. We are just a few steps removed from the contestants trying to get MC Monty Hall's attention during a taping of the old game show Let's Make a Deal. Though I would never want to insult anybody in a comparison among Vladimir Putin, Donald Trump, and Monty Hall. I have respect for Monty Hall. Look, I don't know the last time anything at a White House news conference or anything done by a White House correspondent actually contributed anything measurable to the coverage of a president. Not since Sam Donaldson used to make news by bellowing questions at Ronald Reagan and Reagan condemning himself by refusing to answer them. I also think that if traditional journalism contributes in any way to the prevention of dictatorship here now, it will be by the grunt work, fact-checking the White House news conferences, and revealing legislation and departmental orders, and checking legalities, and confronting an administration's lies with facts. The next Woodward and Bernstein will get there not at the news conferences, but by skill at filing Freedom of Information Act requests. But the idea of quadrupling the amount of reporters that can cover the White House is a Trojan horse with a lot of Trojans in it. Firstly, there is the Putin-like spectacle. The bigger the room, the more room for staffers and hangers-on, and for want of a better term, Trump plants. Trump gave this stunt away at last week's news conference. He packed the place with people applauding for him, and they have as much right to be at a presidential news conference as would people booing him. And that amount of people is none. Quadrupling the number of so-called reporters at the news conferences, and you have suddenly created another stop on the Trump perpetual campaign rally tour. Quadruple the number of so-called reporters at the news conferences, and you suddenly make it easier to ignore the reporters with actual questions as opposed to the ones carrying signs showing Trump wearing a Superman shirt. Quadruple the number of so-called reporters at the news conferences, and you suddenly change from difficult to impossible any coordinated action to prevent Trump repeating the other stunt he used in New York last week, singling out and attacking one reporter the way the bully picks out one kid from the crowd to beat up while the others say, "Thank goodness it wasn't me," and they continue to participate in the farce. The press corps should have walked out then and there, but all that would have happened then would have been more questions from Trump staffers. Quadruple the number of so-called reporters at the news conferences, and you lose any sense of who is asking the questions and what their motivations are. You may abhor Fox News, as Fox News viewers abhor me. You don't have any doubts as to why we are asking what we are asking, either of us. And you don't have any doubts about whether or not we have been planted there. It is, in retrospect, so absurd as to be almost unbelievable and almost forgotten. His name was Jeff Gannon, or so he said, and he represented something called Talon News, and in early 2003, the Bush White House press office began issuing him day passes to its news conferences. But then on January 26, 2005, President Bush held his own news conference, and there was Gannon of Talon News asking him about Senate Democratic leaders, quote, "How are you going to work with people who seem to have divorced themselves from reality?" Within 2 weeks, the whole stunt collapsed. Jeff Gannon was actually James Guckert, and the closest thing he had come to journalism before he began asking friendly questions at the White House was having his naked pictures appear on a series of gay escort websites. Gannon stopped writing for his site. The White House never gave him another press credential. His Talon News organization was tracked back to the owner of the website GOP USA, and then the Talon site was shuttered. It was also later revealed, but never convincingly explained, how Gannon slash Guckert had learned of an internal government memo about the outing of the CIA operative Valerie Plame. And just as all this was playing out, federal records were revealed showing the Bush administration had paid a man named Armstrong Williams $240,000. Williams had a syndicated newspaper column, and in exchange for that money, he was supposed to write positive articles about Bush's No Child Left Behind program and to try to convince other African-American journalists to do the same. The Bush administration's attempt at media manipulation, including literally buying good coverage, was amateurish compared to what we can expect from Trump and his White House chief strategist, the former campaign boss and head of the Breitbart propaganda site, Steve Bannon. Why was it that the Guckert, Gannon, and Williams scams didn't work? They didn't work because they were too easy to spot in a crowd. Solution? Make the crowd bigger. Move the White House press briefings next door, and as Reince Priebus says, you can quadruple the amount of reporters that can cover the White House. So what if you don't know if they're being paid to ask softball questions, or to cheer, or just to serve as more useful idiots at a Trump rally? It's only the end of the First Amendment. Oh, and by the way, the guy the Bushies paid for the positive newspaper columns, Armstrong Williams, he's still around. He works with a Dr. Ben Carson. And when that nominee for Secretary of Housing endorsed Trump in March 2016, the endorsement was confirmed by Armstrong Williams. Resist. Peace.
It is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun what's you're toting? Tell me.
You're listening to Savino Veritas. I'm Tom Savino from Burbank, California, giving you the scoop on the end of the world, which is just hours away, ladies and gentlemen. Hours away. I hope you're preparing for this. We still have a way to conquer this, but it will take time and strength and unity, and it will take some brains. We really do need to be smart about this. It's not a joking matter. This is a satirical show, but as I say, I may be joking, but I'm never kidding, because this is a very scary, frightening, eve of destruction moment in the United States of America. We need to stand together and do something about it. I promise I'll be cheering you up momentarily, but before I do, I'm going to bring you down even more. Here's a tape I got, an audio I got very secretly from an entity called Anonymous. Listen very carefully.
We are Anonymous, and we have been gathering breadcrumbs left by the Kremlin operatives who conducted the cyber Pearl Harbor attack on America's electoral infrastructure. On June 6, 2015, Vladimir Putin signed the order directing Russian SVR to employ every means to manipulate the American election. 2 weeks later, Donald Trump announced his candidacy for U.S. president. Months earlier, Trump met with Russian intelligence officials to formulate a plan to take over the U.S. government with the help of Russia. We know this because we have a mole inside these operations. Alas, when children run operations, they spill milk along the way and forget to clean up. The Kremlin children sloppily left digital fingerprints, communications, and voice messages for Anonymous to find. Yes. We know how these amateurs stole the emails from the Democratic servers in Washington, D.C. That Russian team came in with all its little toys and vacuumed up the data, brazenly setting up shop near the Democratic National Headquarters until its deed was done. We know the Russians have operatives in two U.S. vote machine companies. We know they burrowed into the election systems of 29 states to cause mischief and remove voters. We know they have reverse engineered data cards used in two different vote machines. And we know they have perfected the skill set to wirelessly hack machines to change the votes. The SVR attack was an act of war against the United States to subvert its political system in order to destabilize and paralyze the U.S. so that it could not effectively counter Russian aggression in Europe. It was meant as a warning that democracy itself is no longer safe. The SVR cyber war campaign was insidious and devastating. Stage 1 involved the stealing of sensitive information that could be used to discredit and compromise Hillary Clinton. This stolen data was doctored for maximum damage. It was then disseminated through the Russian propagandist WikiLeaks to make it appear to be from whistleblowers rather than hackers. Stage 2 involved having Russian agents based in pro-Russian countries set up fake news to spread lies about Hillary in order to irreparably damage her and suppress the vote. Thousands of such stories were leveraged into a massive disinformation campaign backed by a Russian troll and cyberbot army. This toxic flood of propaganda poisoned the well of democracy, and undermined the legitimacy and fairness of the election. Stage 3 involved the contacts with Donald Trump both directly and through surrogates such as his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and Russian agent Paul Manafort. Trump has been compromised by the SVR personally and professionally, and Trump knows that he must play their game or be destroyed. For Russia, this is a win-win because either it has Trump as a puppet or it further undermines American democracy by bringing down another president. Stage 4 involved the placement of Russian agents and advocates into the Trump administration and executive agencies in order to ensure that its geopolitical agenda is realized. This is being done right now. Donald Trump has mocked the overwhelming evidence that Russia got him elected through cyber warfare. But now we have shown that the SVR plans and his communications with the Kremlin's goblins are not going to stay hidden. Vladimir Putin's D-Day declaration of war against America has now been exposed. Anonymous asks all respectable intel sources and white hats to flood the world with every scrap of data showing that 75 years after Pearl Harbor, Russia committed another unprovoked act of war against the United States. Let the response be as robust as it was in 1941. We are anonymous, we are legion, we are everywhere. We are nowhere, we do not forgive, we do not forget. Expect us, respect us.
Mysterious, curious to say the least. That audio, by the way, was sent to me a month ago. This is well before, well, at least a week or two before the general media got the information, and the intelligence community released the information about the Russia-Trump connection. As if Anonymous's recording was not mysterious and eerie enough, Bill Minnick in Pennsylvania, friend of Frank Attolo's, and I've never met him, but I feel like he's a friend, sent me an unbelievable link. Well, the link wasn't unbelievable, it was just the link, but when I went to the link, the material was unreal, uncanny, eerie. I'm going to play you the episode of a TV Western from 1958 called Track Down. Track Down with Robert Culp, starring Robert Culp as a Texas Ranger. And the main character of this episode, the name of the particular episode, is The End of the World. The main character in this 1958 episode is Trump. Walter Trump, a snake oil salesman. You have to listen to the similarities between Walter Trump and Donald Trump. Listen to this. I'll comment as I play this for you. To get people's attentions, instead of tweeting, he bangs on a drum. Walter Trump.
Step forward, friends. Step forward. I bring you a message. A message few of you will be able to believe. A message of great importance. A message I alone was able to read in the fires of the universe.
I alone can fix it.
Also bring you the means with which to save yourselves.
Save us from what?
From the end of the world, friend. Which I don't expect you to believe. But the rest of you, those those who want to be alive tomorrow morning. I will tell you tonight. Remember that.
I'll keep you in suspense.
Bring your friends here. I'll tell you tonight so that you will be able to prepare.
What are you selling, Mr. Snake Oil?
The world will come to a flaming end at midnight tonight. Without my help and knowledge, every one of you will be dead.
At this point in the episode, Trump had been standing on the seat of a stagecoach. He came into town in the stagecoach, and he was delivering this speech with the drum. And then he disappears in a cloud of smoke, just the same way Donald Trump entered the Republican National Convention in a cloud of smoke. Texas Ranger Gilman, the hero of the episode, played by Robert Culp, rides into town.
Keep riding, mister. Why? Just order, that's all. Comes midnight tonight, this whole town's gonna be dust. Nothing but rocks and dust. Go ahead and laugh. Everybody else is. Everybody.
Anything else?
Thank you.
Staying long?
Well, no, I just riding through.
Mm-hmm. Law?
Yeah. Tell me something. What's going on in this town anyway? Did your mayor die or what?
World's coming to an end.
How's that?
Midnight tonight, the whole caboodle's gonna burn up.
Oh. Where'd you get that?
Fella back there.
With the one with the hat on?
Mm-mm. Other one.
He says the world is going to come to an end?
Midnight tonight.
Where's he from?
Drove in this morning. Wagon out front.
We can see by Ranger Gilman's expression that he realizes Trump is a fraud.
Mm-hmm. Got a name?
Trump.
I bet it fits. Everybody in town know him?
Mm-mm.
But they're all willing to believe what he says.
We're not going to stop up their ears. He's supposed to give us the whole story tonight.
Well, I don't believe I'll wait till then. Excuse me.
But folks back there think differently.
Well, do they know what's going to happen?
Oh, some of them. They've been told.
TV cameras follows the action as Culp moves to the table with the sheriff and Walter Trump.
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Mike.
Well, we got a ranger with us. How are you? I'm Sheriff Farrell.
Obie Gilman.
Something special bring you down here?
I'm on my way back to Porter.
Oh, I heard they sent for somebody. Too bad about the sheriff down there.
Well, has something happened to him?
He died.
Ah. Well, would you care to join us, Mr. Gilman?
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you.
Planning to remain in town for long?
Well, I understand I have until midnight.
And you heard?
Yeah, I heard. Your name is Trump?
Dr. Walter Trump. D-U-M-C-S-S-R.
Oh, that's a whole bunch of letters.
Just a few of the degrees that have been conferred on me.
Would you mind running through them again for me?
D-U is Doctor of Universe. M-C, Master of Cometry. S-S-R, Student of Stellar Reactions.
Short, perhaps, for U-S-S-R. All those degrees were from Trump University.
Well, how do you figure that the world is going to end?
Well, that's really quite simple. According to my calculations, tonight, November 14th, the Earth will either collide with or come into close proximity to a comet. In any event, the outcome will be disaster. A cosmic explosion will end all. But the end may come by other means.
Now, how do you see it?
By means of this. Uncounted millions of these. This is a meteorite. Iron ore from out of space. They will rain on the Earth like pepper on an egg.
Fake news. Fake news.
Traveling at speeds in excess of millions of miles an hour. Molded by their passage into unstoppable bullets.
But you can stop them, huh?
I can, sir. And I will. See, they are drawn to the Earth by a force that we call gravity.
Unlike Donald Trump, at least Walter believes in science.
Hell, that force. By doing that, I can save this town.
Well, how?
By means of a force repeller.
You sell these force repellers?
You have a very suspicious mind, sir.
All right, Sheriff, how long are you going to put up with this?
What do you mean?
How long are you going to let this con man walk around town?
Be careful, son, I can sue you.
Liars will be sued.
How about it, Sheriff? When are you going to put the lid on?
What for?
Well, stealing is stealing, whether you do it with a gun or a mouthful of mealy words.
I don't intend to sit here and be insulted, Sheriff. If your people don't want my help, I can go elsewhere.
Wait a minute, Mr. Trump. He don't talk for the rest of us. Can you prove he's wrong?
Well, no, not right now, but if you give me some time...
Well, that's something we don't have very much of.
According to him.
Yeah, well, let me tell you something. Right now, it's a lot safer to go his way than it is yours.
Well, how did you get to be Sheriff?
Look, this is not a suggestion, it's an order. Move on.
Hobie didn't know what Trump's pitch was going to be. He was sure of one thing. It was going to cost the people of Talpa. Since the sheriff wouldn't stop Trump, Hobie had to find somebody who would. Sheriff Chet Farrow was the gun law in Talpa, and Judge Clement was the book law. It was to the judge that Ranger Gilman now turned.
Judge Clement?
That's right.
My name is Hobie Gilman. I'd like to talk to you.
Well, come on in. Sit down. Can I get you anything?
No, thank you, sir.
Are you here about Trump?
Yes, sir. What are you going to do about him?
What do you want me to do?
Stop him.
From what?
From taking the town.
Can you prove that that's what he has in mind?
Well, it's obvious.
But can you prove it? In order to arrest him, the sheriff has to have a charge. And Trump hasn't given him a thing to go on.
What side are you on?
The law? Oh, I know how you feel. Maybe I agree with you. But the law is the law. It's got to be kept.
What if I take him?
On what charge?
Fraud.
Don't you see? He's not exactly guilty of fraud.
Well, what about the meteors and a comet and all whatnot?
You might not like it, Mr. Gilman, but he's right. There could be a meteor rain tonight. I live here. I know these people pretty well. And right now, there's nothing in the world could change their minds. And anybody who tries to could end up getting hurt. They're not going to listen.
What if he starts a panic? It could happen.
Well, sure. You might as well try to spit out a forest fire.
Well, there's got to be some way to stop him.
Well, if there is, I don't know it. It's a funny thing.
Sir?
When we were kids, we were all afraid of the dark. And we grew up, and we weren't afraid anymore. But it's funny how a big lie can make us all kids again. Hobie had checked the town. The people were ready to believe. Like sheep, they ran toward the slaughterhouse. And waiting for them was the high priest of fraud.
I am the only one. Just me. I can build a wall around your homes that nothing will penetrate.
We're going to make them pay for that wall.
What do we do? How do we save ourselves?
You ask, how do you build that wall? You ask, and I'm here to tell you.
In typical Trump fashion, there is no wall. They're a bunch of umbrellas. Umbrellas with silly symbols on them.
This is your saving.
You mean that thing is going to save a whole town?
Don't laugh, friend. Please don't laugh. It's the markings. It's the magnetic force that is called up by these markings that will care for your loved ones.
How about our cattle? You got something for them?
They have not been forgotten. This is a very rare metal, friends. Mined by ancient Indian women in the heights of the Andes Mountains. It's in Peru, South America.
Trump shows the crowd of sheep.
Melters of old Montezuma.
A washer.
Refined and compounded until it becomes magnetium.
It's just an average, ordinary washer.
The force repeller is for you, and this little disc, by its mere presence, will care for your animals.
How can we get one of those?
I understand your anxiety, my friend. The thought of death falling from above is not a pleasant one.
You're a liar, Trump. There's not going to be any rain of fire.
Can you deny the meteorites will come? Can you deny the comet?
Well, it's not going to happen the way you say it is.
If it were not for my magnetium friends, those meteorites would be bombarding us this very instant.
Trump looks up at the heavens. The whole crowd looks up.
Look up there! You can see them!
Of course, there's nothing there, but they see them.
By the billions, you can see them!
Like the Emperor's new clothes. Like Donald Trump.
There, I saw one!
There's another one. They're all over the place. Man, it's a fake. There's nothing up there. You're seeing what you want to see. There's nothing up there.
One moment.
To disprove the truth seeker Robert Culp, Trump gets into a little magic hand, a sleight of hand, you might say, and makes a barrel turn into flames. He does this later by science, but the people don't know this.
This is no longer under my protection.
This is a barrel. It's no longer under his protection.
It was my plan to give you the force repellers free. But now that one of you has doubted me, there will be a charge.
How much, Mr. Trump?
$50 apiece.
Mister, he ain't one of us. We don't even know him. Please.
People are going against Robert Culp right now.
Trump, it'll go up with every word.
Threats, threatening. Just like Trump. Just like Donald Trump. Walter Trump. 1958.
Where are your meters?
They will come.
Everybody's waiting for the barrel to be hit by a meteor.
We could dive all day, stand around waiting for them.
This is like having plants at the press conference.
Why don't you keep your mouth shut, mister? Nothing is going to happen. The man is a fake, a phony. Can't you see that? He hasn't got any control of meteorites or anything else.
$75 each.
Don't waste your money. It's a fake. Can't you see that?
Yeah.
Haven't you said enough already, mister? Now get out of here before somebody kills you. Here, give me one of those.
The price was high. For many of the people of the town, it was out of all reason. And so they tried to find another way. Pieces of silver and furniture carried from homes in the east were uncovered. Vessels of family pride were polished to be offered in exchange for the force rebellion.
Take it easy, folks.
I ain't got the money. Will you take this? It's worth more than 75.
No, just hard cash. That junk's no good to me. There you go.
Please, mister, please.
No, sir, you get the hard cash, you get the force repellent. Get out of the way, would you, son?
There you go.
Seen mob panic before, and always he'd been able to stay out of its way. He didn't intend this time to be any different. He stood quietly and watched the mob grind along the street. He couldn't help but think that Trump had been right. Talpa wouldn't be standing in the morning.
Sheriff, are you still here?
They're breaking into the bank.
What do you want me to do about it?
Well, I don't know, but you can try something.
Look, mister, maybe you're a hero. I'm not.
All right, Farrow, take off the badge.
Are you telling me what to do?
No, not me. The state of Texas.
Hold it.
going to give you 10 seconds to clear this room, and I'm going to start shooting.
We need the money in there.
You're not going to get it.
We got our families to think about.
Tomorrow morning, they won't even look at you. They'll be too ashamed.
Gilman's hit over the head.
Get the banker. He can open the safe.
I told you to stay out of it.
Yeah, and I couldn't shoot at him, and he wouldn't buy the bluff. I just got careless.
Trump's sure having his way. Most of the people in town have got those umbrellas, and he's still got 20 minutes till midnight. And when the town doesn't burn down, who's going to get the credit?
They had no way of knowing it, but Trump didn't want the credit. He had what he did want. The town's money and a fresh horse. Hobie had been ready to give up. If Talpa didn't want his help, he wasn't going to stand against it. But with the judge's words pushing at him, the ranger decided to have one more try at stopping the entire affair. In order to do it, he had to find the con man before he left town.
Aren't you going to stay for the fireworks? Huh? Looks like you're going to go before everything's done.
I've done all I can for Talpa.
Figure it's time for me to be moving on. Well, I think you ought to wait.
That's where you and I disagree.
You're under arrest.
What charge?
Well, you write it any way you like. Grand theft, fraud, I think a jury will find it stealing.
I'd expect to prove it.
You and I are going to be right here after midnight.
What?
You're going to go back and tell him it's a fake. That those parasols wouldn't keep him dry in heavy dew.
Oh, not me.
You did a good job working him up into this mood. Now let's see you talk your way out of it.
Give me a break, Ranger.
Like the one you gave the town?
I knew you'd get me out of this.
Sure, that's why you were leaving without telling me.
Well, you don't believe that. I was on my way when the ranger stopped me.
Well, you were, huh?
You don't think I'd lie, do you?
You don't want an answer to that. No, I don't need you now. Every minute you're alive, my neck's in trouble. And there are those saddlebags. I'll take them.
It's just you and me. We'll tell him we couldn't find the money.
I know where it is. I know you and Trump are in it together.
Look, you can't prove a thing. Oh, are you taking me?
Back to Trump's wagon. You're going to tell the truth.
They'll kill me, sure.
Won't make much difference, will it?
What?
Well, the world's going to come to an end in 5 minutes.
Trump is killed, and the sheriff is arrested by Gilman. This episode has been very prophetic in many, many ways. Will it be prophetic in other ways? One can hope.
That ignited in the temperature of the air. They wanted to believe Gilman, but they still weren't over the hump. He had to find one crack in their fear, one place to start breaking through. Until the crowd knew that everything Trump had said was a lie, there was no hope for Talpa. The confidence man would always get the credit for saving the town. As long as the parasols were up, Trump was still believed.
Culp stands out in the open air without an umbrella, waiting for midnight to show the crowd that there are no meteors coming to kill them, and that Trump had created all that unnecessary fear.
Still standing. You know, watching you talk, looking at them. It was just one thing that bothered me. If you'd have been wrong, I didn't have a parasol.
The End of the World episode was written by John Robinson and directed by Don McDonald on CBS TV 1958 Trackdown series. Louis Black on Tomorrow's Coronation.
The inaugural-
inauguration of America's last president is only a few days away, and it's shaping up to be as exciting as birdwatching with a tax attorney.
We're days away from Donald Trump's inauguration, so why is such a major event having problems booking major acts?
At least some stars are turning down the invitation.
Donald Trump has had a tough time attracting many celebrities. Celine Dion, Elton John, Kiss, Ice-T, just a few.
You want to know why so many celebrities died in 2016? It was to get out of playing the goddamn inauguration. But hey, being universally hated is no excuse for not throwing a good party. Richard Nixon booked James Brown for his inauguration. Look at that. The godfather of soul shaking hands with James Brown. Personally, I don't give two shits whether famous people are lining up to serenade the new president. I got my tickets, and I'm gonna go no matter what, because I wanna be there when Trump touches the Bible and his hand catches on fire. But you know what? President-elect Sour Grapes doesn't give a damn if the cool kids come to his party.
Trump tweeted as though the whole thing doesn't bother him. The so-called A-list celebrities are wanting tickets to the inauguration, but look what they did for Hillary. Nothing. I want the people.
What a coincidence. The guy who can't book any celebrities doesn't want any celebrities. Reminds me of when I was a teenager. And I swore off having sex with the prettiest girl in my class. No thanks, Charlene. I'm in a loving relationship with some Polaroids of my cleaning lady. Now, before you go thinking it's just celebrities turning down the gig, even people known for lining up and doing exactly what they're told to don't want to perform.
The Rockettes are kicking up controversy over the upcoming presidential inauguration.
The Rockettes represent a legacy of strong, intelligent, and classy women. And so to associate this with Mr. Trump, who has a public history of degrading women, objectifying women, really tarnishes what the Rockettes embody.
Well, how about we compromise? The Rockettes are forced to perform, but they get to take turns kicking President Trump in the balls. And speaking of balls, this inauguration has such a stink on it, it's toxic to even get near it.
Uproar on social media after the band from a historically black college in Alabama is invited to perform at President-elect Donald Trump's inauguration. The Talladega College Marching Tornadoes Band accepted the invitation to take part in the inaugural parade.
Why the hell is a historically black college's marching band performing for a guy who retweets white supremacists? If you want a college marching band, what about Trump University? Sure, it's just one guy with a kazoo who's $50,000 in debt, but he sure could use the work. But don't ever count the Donald out. He's always got a few surprises up his sleeve. And Trump's inauguration committee tweeted out the big news.
Proud to have the Case on Platoon, home of the Army's oldest and most famous horse, Blackjack, take part in Inauguration Day 2017.
Move over, Beyonce and Jay-Z. We've got a celebrity horse coming through. Of course, Blackjack himself won't be able to attend since he died in 1976. Not to coin a phrase, but you guys are literally tweeting a dead horse. Right now, the two biggest acts booked for the inauguration are an America's Got Talent contestant, not winner, and the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. Yes, the thrill of choir music, but with the edginess of Mormonism. And don't forget about the parties. At one of the inaugural balls, they've got great acts like 1980s cover band The Reagan Years. They play all the hits from the 80s while ignoring the existence of AIDS. But look, when it comes down to it, we may not know who will perform, but we've just found out the theme.
With just over a week until Donald Trump is officially sworn in as president, we now have a better idea of the theme of his celebration, soft sensuality.
Yeah, that's right. Soft sensuality. Good to know when America's getting by Donald Trump, at least he'll do it gently.
Do you take it in the ass?
Thank you so much for listening. This is Tom Savino with Savino Veritas. Join me next Thursday and every Thursday, 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 11 p.m. Eastern Time at 148.ca/1 and 24/7 on the Too Cool for School website, juicedtalk.com. Remember, I may be joking, but I'm never kidding. Resist!
Oh, I am sorry, sir. I didn't mean to overstep my bounds. You say that.
What?
Meeting is adjourned.
It is?
No, you say that, Governor.
What?
Meeting is adjourned.
It is?
The end.
By George, he's got it. It is the end.
No, that'll be all. Just be sure to lock the door behind you on your way out. Good night.